You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 7 o'clock, and next is Queen Talk. Stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio and the Jazz Society of Oregon are thrilled to present the 38th Annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, July 20th, 21st, and 22nd at Cathedral Park in North Portland. The weekend starts with blues on Friday night. Norman Sylvester, Reggie Houston, and the Northwest Women Rhythm and Blues will be there. Saturday and Sunday will include Becky Kilgore, the Quadrophones, Tahira Memory, Randy Porter with Nancy King, the Ray Charles Review, and more. That's the 38th Annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, Portland's longest-running community event, July 20th, 21st, and 22nd, under the St. John's Bridge in North Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Pass the Mic on Friday, July 20th from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Franklin High School in Portland. Pass the Mic aims to decrease isolation and find ways to connect youth to carve out their own expressive safe space and to share it in their own creative terms. This five-day music camp culminates in a closing concert by the Immigrant and Refugee Youth Campers, featuring their bands and performances created during the week. Again, that's Pass the Mic on Friday, July 20th from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Franklin High School, 5405 Southeast Woodward Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess. Paparazzi, catch my fly and my cocky fresh. I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. Oh, I like my baby hair with baby hair and afro. I like my Negro nose with Jackson 5 nostrils. I earned all this money, but they never take the country out me. I got hot sauce in my bag. Swag.
Ooh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Queen Talk. This is episode number 9. Shout out to everyone that's listened to all 8 episodes. You guys are riders. Tonight, we are going to be talking about a Huffington Post article written by DeShante titled, I'm Exhausted from Trying to Be the Right Kind of Black Girl at Work. So I just want to go ahead and have my guests go around and say their name, their current industry or job, and future career goals or plans.
I'm Kingsley. I'm head of marketing at Double T, which is owned by the Roseland Theater. That's one of the biggest booking agencies here in Portland, Oregon. And I'm also an artist on the side. And my next goals would have to be you playing my song as your intro.
Wow.
That's my next goal.
That's a good one.
Okay. My name is Kimra Hamblin, and I am a cosmetology instructor over in Vancouver, Washington. And my goals is to, just bring light to students who don't have self-esteem. Mm.
My name is Paris Simone, and I currently am a senior admin at Nike. I work in the NBA department. And my future goals right now, I feel like I've kind of gotten my foot in the door and I'm kind of trying to figure out what department or what role working for Nike would be like a good place for me to move into next.
Awesome. Thank you all for being here. Like I said, today we're going to be discussing an article called I'm Exhausted from Trying to Be the Right Kind of Black Girl at Work. And the reason I chose this as this month's show topic is because I've been feeling this way a lot at my current job. And I honestly thought I was alone. So after reading this article, I was like, wow, this is like my life. So I'm just going to dive right in. Like I said, this is written by DeShante. So she starts with, much of my experience as a black woman has been learning to survive in white spaces. The last time I was able to exist in a majority black environment was in elementary school more than 15 years ago. Once I matriculated into the next level of academia, my parents decided to place me into a more diverse middle and high school. Diverse, as in majority white, with a few people of color sprinkled throughout. I didn't have a hard time transitioning into my new white environment. I embraced it as any eager middle school girl would. What I do recognize in hindsight were the tiny ways in which I went into survival mode. This was the beginning of a life filled with endless code switching, always modifying my behavior and appearance to adapt to my new socio-cultural normal. These are tongue twisters, by the way. My fashion choices changed from Rockaware, shout out Rockaware, to Hollister and Abercrombie. I begged my parents for Birkenstock shoes and Vera Bradley handbags, and I only wore my naturally curly hair pressed bone straight. I was doing everything in my power to transcend my race, to be more relatable to my peers. Yes, I'm black, but look at how much we have in common. It's okay to be friends with me. There were thousands of subtle ways that I changed myself to make sure I was the right kind of black girl for the white people who suddenly surrounded me. Safe, sweet, not too bossy, not too loud, not ghetto at all. Enunciate every word. Diction is done with the tip of the tongue. Hmm. I had to make sure that I didn't stand out more than I already did. I felt like everyone was looking at me, waiting for the moment that I dropped the ball so that I could confirm their preconceived notions about black people. So that's a lot. But how do you all feel about the author's description of growing up as a black woman in white spaces, and can you relate?
I feel like on some level we almost all have to relate because we're here in Portland.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I definitely can relate a lot with what she's saying. I grew up in Tualatin and went to private schools out there. And definitely remember having like one or two other black girls in my class. And of course, everyone thought we were cousins or twins or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
I like how she says the fast, is it? Yeah. Code switching. I'm from Chicago, but I grew up in a suburb about 45 minutes when I turned 8 and just grew up there for the last 20 years. And the code switching is great. I would be one way with my suburban kids, and then we'd go to visit my grandma, and I would be totally a different way. And you almost get exhausted going back and forth that you kind of mess up every once in a while with who you're supposed to be. But I really like how she says the she almost didn't notice that she was switching because you're in middle school, and I was a third grader, and I was eager to like make friends immediately and try to fit right in as a kid, not even as a person of color.
Right.
Well, I think my experience that I've came across is we were younger, and we went to, I think it's outdoor school here in Portland, Oregon. That was like a long, long time ago. And I think we had to kind of like fit in, but they used to make fun of us because we had braids. And I never understood the concept of why would they be making fun of us with braids, because there was another student that was Caucasian that had braids. So why would you want to make fun of me? But through it all, I thought that was an eye-opener at the age of 10 years old in Portland, Oregon. So
yeah,
I tried to adapt,
yeah,
to my surroundings.
Yeah, and now it's like high fashion, it's like boxer braids and like, you know, like everything that like the Kardashians do, but like we've been doing
it. Rainbow turned into Fashion Nova real quick.
Right. So moving on to like the next section of this article, DeShante says, it wasn't until I graduated from high school and enrolled in my PWI, predominantly white institution, that I realized how much I was playing pretend. I loved my college, and the majority white demographic was something I was very well adjusted to, but I suddenly felt like I didn't belong and that this experience was going to be different. The mask that I religiously wore wasn't serving me anymore, so I finally gave myself permission to let it go. I stopped straightening my hair all the time, I stopped worrying so much about what people thought of me, and I stopped trying so hard to be accepted by the white people around me. I didn't need to pretend anymore. I finally felt at peace about who I was. I found my community of black friends in college who I could be my complete self around. I didn't have to worry about surviving under a white gaze anymore, or so I thought. By the time I graduated from college, I finally had a real sense of who I was. I had worked hard to find myself, and I had achieved some pretty stellar goals along the way. Being my authentic self in college opened so many doors for me. I was proud to have graduated with a job in public relations, unlike most of my peers, and I thought I was adjusting to my new adult career, or I thought adjusting to my new adult career would be a breeze. So that's like a nice twist, and I can totally relate to this part. I mean, this whole entire article, but specifically this part, because I feel like I didn't find myself or embrace like my blackness until I went to college at U of O. And I feel like Kimmer can almost speak to this because she's known me for like a really long time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't in BSU, but like there were black people, more black people than I ever saw going to like, you know, mm-hmm. Central Catholic and like All Saints and like, you know, I just felt like I could finally just, like, breathe and, like, mm-hmm. laugh the way I wanted to laugh and, like, dance the way I wanted to dance and not feel like every single eye in the room was, like, on me. So, how did you all feel about DeShante's reclamation of her culture and what were your experiences in college or, like, post-high school?
I think my experiences were interesting. I started off at a PWI, as she says. For 2 years, it was a private school, 3,000 kids in total, and there were more international students than there were black students, and we were all in sports, all of us on sports. If you were black and you weren't on sports at the school, they're like, why are you here? So I could not take much more of that school, and I ended up transferring to a big university and found my group of people there. But even in that big university, I don't think I really discovered myself until probably the end of my senior year, right before I graduated, and I realized I would not have to see Illinois and Midwest folks again, that I was like, this is it, so I'm going to just be myself.
Yeah, I think kind of going back to what you were saying about code switching and, you know, once you kind of realize, when you're young, you're just doing it. You're just trying to fit into whatever environment it is that you're in, as most kids do. And when you realize that that's what's going on and what you're doing, I feel like maybe I even had a phase where I was like overcompensating in the other direction. Like I was trying to prove to myself my own blackness, or even I was frustrated with myself about things that I had that I liked because I had been in that environment. And I think kind of the same thing, I also went to a PWI small college, 1,500 students, about the same as my high school. And I think that kind of same towards the end of my senior year is kind of when I found that like breath of like calmness and like, okay, I feel like this is who I am and it's okay, and that I don't care what other people think, and that either way, whether it be I'm code switching because I'm in a white audience or code switching because I'm in a black audience, that like I can't be put in a box either way. Mm-hmm. And that blackness is as many things as we recognize that whiteness is.
Sure.
Totally.
I think the school that I went to, it was like 3% black. So when I got there, I was like, oh, this is going to be amazing. But at the same time, I felt like even if there's not a lot of us, we can still be loud. And not loud in a bad way, but that they want to be around us. Mm-hmm. And what I like so much about that is that through time, I found that there was other people that felt the same way we did. We're like, oh, we're not alone. So we created these groups. And then it was like multicultural. So it was like, not just me, it was others. And, I don't know, I found like we were very confident after that. We were, this is it. We about to roll with this. So I found that we fit in, I guess.
Yeah, and I just want to go back to Kingsley's point about, like, the athletes, because I feel like that's definitely something that mm-hmm. I felt at University of Oregon. And I just want to get your guys' opinion on that. I feel like, my opinion is, I feel like these, like, athletes, especially, like, athletes of color are being exploited. Like, they are, you know, the money makers, they're the faces of these organizations or universities. But, you know, they're also, like, falling asleep in class, some of them, and like not passing their classes, but they're passing because they have to play, and in order to play you have to pass. And like I just feel like it's doing a disservice to you know, the individual, and they're kind of like being dehumanized. Like, they're being seen as like a product to bring more money in for the school, and, you know, to heck with how they feel, you know, what they're gonna do post grad life and things like that. So I just want to get, you know, your all's opinion on that.
Yeah, I did a track and field. I was a high jumper all the way to my junior year of college before I got hurt. And as soon as I got hurt, that was the end of it. Like, scholarships, friendships, everything. It was kind of just dropped off. And you just find your own way. But I think the most pressure you feel being a Black athlete is that if your body doesn't perform, then you're not important to anyone else. Mm-hmm. So that's just, and it's a lot of pressure that you put on yourself, and a lot of pressure that the school puts on you. And I think out of all of the races, African Americans are the most pressured, because scholarship is how you get to school. So,
yeah, very kind of similar. I was an athlete in high school. I also did track, and was so focused on it as my way to get to school. And then I ended up going to a school that didn't have sports at all. They like played Quidditch on the front lawn, and that was like sports, and like rugby was like a big thing because it was like, you know, hipster and trendy. And then I actually ended up writing my senior thesis on this topic, on male athletes specifically, and kind of their exploitation, you know, by college and professional sports. And I think also at the end of the day, it kind of comes back to what I was saying even a minute ago about, you know, accepting that Blackness is more than one thing. And I think that that is, as far as imagery is concerned, something that is so potent in all of our minds, that if you are a Black student, the likelihood of you also being an athlete, or the assumption that you're also an athlete, goes way up. And I had a really hard time when I first went to my college trying to figure out how I existed in a classroom without having that clout of also being an athlete. So yeah, I think that that transition is a lot and a very critical time as to how you move forward for your future. Because like you said, if you get hurt, or if athletics all of a sudden falls from underneath you, what do you have to fall back on?
Right.
And what can you focus on after that?
Yeah. What do you think, Kimra? I know that your son is like a really amazing wrestler, and your daughter is a super awesome volleyball player. Like, what do you have any like fears or concerns, like when they go? I mean, I feel like CJ is like, I mean, he's gonna go places. I'm not just because you're my friend, but like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I just wonder about that.
Well, we teach him you have to be grounded and understand that you'll have that no matter where you go. And still today, I mean, there could be those challenges even now, and he's not even in high school yet. But I do know that he has parents that voice that opinion. And the thing about with me and my son and this such a whole athletic thing is that me and my husband speak light into any type of administration. This is my son at the end of the day. If he gets hurt, who's going to take care of him?
Right.
We have to, but at the same time, we have to get something formal to say that, you know, this is not, don't just use my son just for your light. That's not going to go down. So I think if you have somebody, if you're younger, your parents to kind of like voice that opinion, because when you're in college, it's a different ball game. You got to be able to speak your mind and say, no, you're not going to use me for your podium. It's just, you got to speak that.
But what about the parents? Because like my dad's even like this, and I love him to death, but like he, I hope he never listens to this, but I mean, I love him, but sometimes I feel like he was living through my brother as far as his athletic career.
Definitely.
And so I wonder about that. I wonder like how it is for, you know, athletes in general, male athletes, African American or Black male athletes, like who have those type of fathers or even mothers like that are living through them. Like, that's an added pressure. You got the school pressuring you have yourself pressuring you, and then you have like that pressure of like, well, I have to live up to, you know, my parents expectation, you know what I mean? I just about that. I'm like,
it's a balance. You have to literally look at all your avenues of things. That you can't just always think, oh, he about to be, like you say, he's gonna be all ball. Well, I just think you have to look at what you have.
I think that a lot of it falls on coaches too. I think that especially like at that young age, especially our, you know, Black male coaches and coaching and pushing that, cultivating the whole self that, you know, this is an outlet and that this is something that's great and maybe you are really good at this and maybe you are the next LeBron, but also like how many LeBrons are there in this whole pool of people that are in this sport? And, you know, like also reminding kids and young athletes that like LeBron has a whole team of people behind him, and like maybe that's what you want to do, or maybe, you know, your strengths will at some point as you get older and as this starts to get more competitive move into somewhere else. And I think that going back to on it being really a big part of the coach's responsibility is how the team is structured. Is the team, do they do group study together? Do they do, you know, group practice? Do they have team bonding that maybe relates to the sport but also pushes that idea of cultivating a whole self outside of just being an athlete, or, you know, just the physical labor that is symbolized in athletes, especially for Black males?
Well, I think that there, we started with the history of time of how to get to school was athletic scholarship.
Right.
So the pressures that Black males and Black females have of going to college rides on one thing: can I get a scholarship for it? And up until, I'd say maybe 10, 15 years ago, it was strictly through sports. And now we have so many more options of like, you could be a lawyer, you can go to school for that. So I think changing that mindset is going to take far more than just a couple years and a couple coaches. It's just like systematically, we know you're an athlete, you're going to get a full ride, period. If you get academic scholarship, you don't know if you'll get it all paid for. But if you were an athlete, you get it all paid for. And I think changing that thought is going to take some time for even coaches, because all of my coaches were like, what school are we going to try to get a full ride for when I was going to school? Like, which school are we trying to go 100% with? And it wasn't like, which school do you want to be a doctor at?
Right.
So.
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree.
Yeah, well, thank you all for feeling comfortable to share. We're going to take a quick music break and we will be back.
Ain't nothing to it. Real one. Ain't nothing to it. Boss. Ain't nothing to it.
Nothing to it.
Real one. Ain't nothing to it.
Nothing.
Boss. I pay the cost. Ooh, gon' take it all.
Take it all.
I record, then I ball.
Then I ball.
I ignored a lot of calls.
Click.
You ain't talking about nothing, I ain't got no time. Got that Donetto on my mind. Ooh, I got real problems just like you. Tell that trick, I don't like you. Ain't nothing to it, real one. Ain't nothing to it, boss. Ain't nothing to it, real one. Ain't nothing to it.
Million crib, 3 million watch, all facts, no cap, false. You not a boss, you got a boss. Getting jerked, that shit hurts, I take it personally. Rather work for the man than to work with me. Just so they can pretend they on my level, that shit is irking to me. Pride always goeth before the fall, almost certainly. It's disturbing what I gross.
What I gross.
Survey says you not even close.
Not even close.
Everybody's bosses to the time to pay for the office. To them invoices separate the men from the boys. Over here we measure success by how many people successful next to you. Here we say you broke if everybody is broke except for you. Boss.
Ain't nothing to it. Real one. My mama with my my great-great-grandchildren already rich. That's a lot of brown turn on your Forbes list. Frolicking around my compound on my fortress. Ooh, I be riding around with my seat reclining. Dropping my daughter off at school every morning. We slamming car doors. I be trolling on these bum boys. You ain't talking about nothing, I ain't got no time. Boss, chill, tell them cats they gotta relax. Toes in the sand, mama getting fast. Nothing to it, nothing to it, real one.
So cute. Okay, hey everyone, thanks for tuning into tonight's episode of Queen Talk. Tonight my guests and I are discussing Dee Shantay's article, I'm Exhausted from Trying to Be the Right Kind of Black Girl at Work. You can find that on Huffington Post or just Google it. So I know we kind of got off the article topic, but I'm going to go back and finish how the author describes her experiences as a black woman in the workplace. So she starts with saying, I didn't realize that my survival mode was about to kick into overdrive. Being one of the few black girls at school came with its own social pressures, but it was nothing compared to being part of the very limited number of black people at work. The stakes were suddenly much higher and the pressure was worse. Oh gosh, what's this word? Somebody help me out. The
adage.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Bear with me. You have to work twice as hard for half as much. So the mantra, if people don't know what that word means, like me, that's what it means. never rang more true. Not only did I find myself slowly putting on the mask again, I hated myself for the constant code switching I was forced to do. I started focusing on the ways my words sounded coming out of my mouth again. I hate meaningless conversation, but when I go to work, I become a master at small talk. I transform into a watered-down version of myself to ensure that I am
palatable.
I'm so sorry. Palatable.
You got it.
Conversations at work were more about my hair and my clothes than the job. I became the spokesperson for the black community and diversity in the office. I had a mental list of things that I shouldn't do, wear, or say at work. So, number one, wear your natural curls, but not too big so you don't bring too much attention to your fro. Don't wear your hair in too low buns anymore, because last time you did, someone grabbed them and called you a Powerpuff Girl in a meeting. You were so embarrassed that you wanted to cry. Avoid political conversations by any means necessary. Be stylish, but not too stylish at work, because people have commented on the length of your legs, the height of your heels, and your body at work. Don't bring too much attention to your body. Be soft-spoken when you speak, not too firm or harsh. Don't show any emotions, especially anger or irritation. Be careful about who you talk to and what you say. Don't bring too much attention to yourself. Don't bring too much attention to yourself. Don't bring too much attention to yourself. Being a young black girl in a majority white professional environment also has its own complexities. I recall the day I was called a little girl at work by a colleague in the most condescending manner. I have thick skin and rarely does anything bring me to tears, but in that instant I never felt so small. I called my mom and cried. After 10 minutes, I had to pick myself up and pretend like nothing happened. I was already young and black. I couldn't afford to let anyone see me crying. I had to be strong or they will never take me seriously. So yeah, what do you think about that list? Have you felt that way, all of those ways, some of those ways, at work?
Where is she from?
I would love to do like more research. Oh, okay. I was sent this article, but yeah, I would love to know that.
Just because it just seems so like, wow, like you experienced this.
I can tell you, I've experienced everything on that list.
Yeah. Really?
Here. Agreed.
Yeah. Especially 1, 4, 5, and 6. So like, yeah, that's where I'm at.
Four is a great one.
Yeah. Spoken when you speak.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I have to say
do not
things,
be right.
Say when you want to stay your point, you have to be like, but I just think that smiling, because right. I'm not upset and right. I don't want to be too passionate. But that's just what I think.
Right.
Oh.
I'm the only black girl.
Wow.
And there's no anger ever. Just only happy.
Right.
Even if you're angry, only happy.
Especially if you're right. And you have the right facts. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That anger has
and you
to
have
stay.
To, like, casually say that you're right.
Right.
Making them think that they think you're right, even though you're right.
Right.
Gotcha.
Okay. Right. Yeah. It's like that otherwise you invalidate yes. yourself.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay.
Definitely.
Yes.
I think kind of the last paragraph where she's talking about being called a little girl at work. So this actually happened to me when I was overseas. And I was living in Greece, working in Greece. Everyone in Greece, like if Kylie Jenner was in Greece, no one would know she was Kylie Jenner because everyone just looks that mm-hmm. way. And I remember, I don't even remember what had happened. I remember it was like a series of things of, you know, this whole 10 list that kept going on and kept going on. And someone at work, my coordinator, pulled me into her office and told me that I was inhumane and that I was angry and that she hadn't seen any professional development or growth in me in the 8 months that I had been there, and that the group of Americans that were working at the school that year was the worst group that she had ever had, and then told me that I had to move out of my room so that this other girl could move into my room because she didn't have a safe living space, but that I needed to move into her room so that this other girl could have a safe living space, but apparently me having a safe living space didn't matter. And I remember I called my mom and I felt that same way, and I was so upset and I was crying and I was just like, I don't know why they're treating me like this. Like, I'm not moving my room. I'm about to go off. And my mom said, well, does she know that you're so upset? And I said, no, I'm not crying in front of her. And I remember my mom saying to me, you know, sometimes it is okay to cry, and sometimes you need to let people see that side of you so that they can recognize that there also is a human in you that gets mm-hmm, hurt, mm-hmm. and that it's not always this like strong, tough, hard exterior. So yeah, that part stuck out to me.
But it's almost like, I feel like it's almost like, and I am like a big fan of RuPaul's Drag Race, and the Vixen said this, so I'm going to quote the Vixen, and she was basically like, don't tell me how to react, you need to tell people how to act, okay? Mm-hmm. So
Amen.
My reaction is based on how I'm being treated, but mm-hmm. I always am the bad guy, or the bad girl, or the bad person. So it's like, I feel like I agree with your mom in that instance, like, yeah, but you shouldn't have to fight to humanize yourself, mm-hmm. you know what
totally.
I mean? So I feel like, yeah, I get where she's coming from, but also it's like, maybe that woman or boss person, like,
yeah,
should treat you like a human. You
definitely.
Know what I mean?
But I'm the one that's inhumane, remember?
Right.
Wow, that's huge for somebody to say that.
Inhumane. Yeah. It was a lot.
A boss.
It was a lot. A boss. Another wild story. We were, so part of my like responsibilities were to do the like newsletter and like communications for all the events that had been happening at the school, and they did a play in Greek theater, so it was in Greek, so I hadn't gone to see the play, but I had to have someone, you know, send me an article about it, and I'm looking through these pictures that they had taken, and I'm scrolling through the pictures, and I come across one of the students is on stage in blackface. And I'm obviously the only black person in this Greek school. And I remember
I was so shocked, and I like went to my boss and I was so mad and I was like, what the F is this? Like, what's going on here? And she was like, oh, like, that's not blackface. They're supposed to look like their face is dirty or something. And I remember I was like, okay, well, you know, you bring us here. This is like an American school. You bring us Americans here and you tell us you want us to have this like American presence and influence. And so as a black American, you know, X, Y, and Z, so calm about it. This is why this is like not chill. And this is why we should not be doing this. Mm-hmm. And it turned into, well, actually, we're mad at you because you called us racist. And I don't know how you could say anything so horrible about the school or the people that work here. And my 60-something-year-old boss told everyone at the school not to talk to me. Yeah. And they iced me out for like 2 months.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy.
Woo. So this is just a lesson to anyone who's naive enough to think that racism is only in the United States.
Oh, it's all. Well, they don't even believe it here.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that's even worse, especially overseas. They're like, oh, well, that's not our history. Like, it, like, no, we can't be racist because we're not American. Yeah, you can only be racist if you are a white American.
Oh, my gosh.
But, you know.
It's crazy, though, because you can say it so articulately and really spell it out. And your point is still just like far off. Today, actually, at work, I had my favorite thing of white people telling me they're almost as dark as me when they tan.
Jesus.
It's my favorite thing about summer.
That happened to Jesus, me today.
Second to ice cream. It's like they're almost tan. And she, one of the girls, said, you'd be so proud of me. Oh, first Jesus. Off, why would I be proud?
Oh my God.
You want to check black on your census? Do it. There's no rules anymore. Just check it. And afterwards, I said a snarky comment because I'm getting much better at the way that I present it. But I said, oh, honey, my tan was a gift from God, and you can't imitate it, but you can try to duplicate it.
Beautiful. Oh,
yeah. Yes. And my coworker beautiful. Spit out his coffee, and he goes, that's why I love Mo. That's why I love her. And it's become a point where I'm like, I almost have to be too clever for them to have to sit. Because if I say it too spelled out,
right.
they won't like that I'm dumbing it down. They're like, we get what you're saying.
I'm a
but if I
got to
be
woman.
Articulated about it,
yeah.
go back to your seat and think about that.
Right? Yeah, you got to leave their jaw on the floor. You have to. That one's right next to the, oh, do you tan in the summer? Do you get dark?
Do you get dark?
Did you cut your hair? Oh my gosh, your hair grew overnight.
7 inches? Wild.
Is that your real hair?
Jesus must have blessed you people. Like, goodness gracious.
I'm so done. Okay, so I just want to finish up the article, but that like ties right in. So DeShante says, the microaggressions I was dealing with at work led to an enormous amount of self-doubt and caused me to put more pressure on myself than I could ever imagine. The code switching was exhausting, but I needed to keep it up for survival. This was my job now. I'm usually a confident person, but that confidence dwindles on bad days. I do my best to work hard and be the best that I can be, but I still tense up in meetings and question if I even belong there. I want to make sure I present myself in the most professional way possible. As a black woman, my actions represent an entire community. I am fully aware of the stereotypes, and I try to tear them down one by one by not reinforcing them. Sometimes I suffer from imposter syndrome. Despite all of the hard work I put in for my career, I still get paranoid and second-guess every word that comes out of my mouth. I feel like I'm holding my breath every day from 9 to 5, and when I leave the office, I can breathe again. I find my balance outside of work. I indulge in environments that let me live unapologetically. I read too many books, volunteer, and network with people I admire. I have real conversations with my friends about the world around us. I also have allies and safe zones in the office that allow me to come completely undone and express how I feel during frustrating moments. I'm working on learning how to function fearlessly in these spaces without constructing who I am. But until I completely arrive at that moment, I'll keep my mask handy, a shield keeping me safe.
Wow.
Amazing. Beautifully said. And I just want to open up the phone line for anyone that's listening right now who wants to voice their opinion on the show or any specific part of the article, as long as it's obviously respectful and appropriate. If not, please just keep it to yourself. But the phone number is 503-231-8187. Again, if you want to call in and just give us some feedback on anything that we said or that you heard, the phone number is 503-231-8187. Okay, yeah, I feel like I would love to hear from other female-identified people who identify as Black or African American, but it's open to anybody if you just want to call in, as long as like you're coming from a place of curiosity and understanding, obviously. And we're not here to like bash anyone. We're not here to bash white people. I'm half white. My mom's white. I'm sure we all have friends that are of all different races in this room. So just please understand that. And I hope nobody felt that we were doing that, but it is like a space that we have like to ourselves to, you know, express ourselves, and we don't
talk about
normally,
truth.
Yeah, get that space. So just please understand that. So the phone number is 503-231-8187. So
I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Is anyone here ever been like bold enough to like, you know, you get the reach out like for the grab for the hair? Like, has anyone ever been bold enough
yes.
to like grab back? You know what I mean? Like, oh, your hair, it's so pretty. Is this real? Like, oh, your hair is so pretty. Is this real?
That has happened to me in the mall, and I was with my kids, and it was somebody I actually knew, but she was a parent.
Okay.
And she went to go reach. Oh, it was so... And she grabbed my hair, and my kids was like, oh!
It's about to happen.
My kids is like, oh! And they all backed up. And I was like, oh! And I grabbed her hair. It was just an instinct.
Yeah.
And then it was like, this awkward silence.
Yeah. Did she realize?
She did.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did like, she apologize?
Oh, I'm sorry,
or
okay. I wasn't trying it. I'm like, okay. But it was like, it caught me off guard.
Yeah.
I had the long Marley twist last summer.
Okay.
Big red 24-inch Marley twist. And anytime someone would grab my hair, I'd pretend like they hurt my neck and that I was suing. So,
like, perfect. Oh, no, my neck. You broke it.
And people just like,
like, you
right.
touch
don't
people.
Touch. Don't touch. And that wouldn't have happened.
So, I feel like I've never... I can only remember once someone like grabbing my hair like that, and I was at a bar.
Oh, Jesus.
And I was obviously like enjoying myself.
Right.
And it was a guy. And I like literally wanted to turn around and punch him in the face, but he did it while I was walking past him. So, like, obviously, like when I turned around, he was gone.
Right.
But it's just like, I don't understand. It's like, first of all, you don't know if I wash my hair every day. Like, that's disgusting.
It is gross. Also, I don't know what's on your hands, and that's even more disgusting.
No, for real. But the thing is, like, I always have people, like, doing the comments, like, oh, your hair is so, like, how long did it take to do your hair? And it's so straight. And so I'll just be like, how long does it take to do your hair? Like, why do you feel like your business?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's just like, I just don't understand
My thing is, if you've been asking the same question your whole life, like,
right.
if everyone has a story to why, like, someone has done it to them, I'm like, who are all these people? Y'all need to talk. Get together. Have a circle.
Have a support group. Figure it out.
I
study, research.
Black girls' hair support group.
Oh, my gosh.
My name is Karen.
Oh, my gosh.
I touch black women's hair. This is the data I've
collected
over the years.
I had a funny time of when I just wore my fro out. I do it every couple of days, but I do it over the weekend, so it's just like my people get to see it.
Uh-huh.
And I did it. I wore it to work on Friday, and I was like, I didn't want to, but I had to. And I got all the comments like, oh, you look good, or blah, blah, blah. And one of the ladies in my office told me I look closer to my roots. And I was like, Springfield, Illinois? Thank you.
Yeah, please do tell me where those roots are. Please do.
Springfield? That's cool. I didn't know they look like this, but all right.
It's just crazy.
What is the thought process when you say, or when you go, like, what do you want out of it? That's the thing that I don't get. I never go up to a white girl and I'm like, I'm just so inquisitive about your brows. Let me, oh.
Oh,
they're
gosh.
Thin.
Fuzzy.
Just like I thought. Like, I'm just like, I don't get it. What's behind it?
Yeah.
I think it's a curiosity. I literally think they're just, I think people are just
naive.
Well, I look at it like this. We're beautiful. And maybe it's something that they're like, oh, they're exquisite. Oh, my gosh, I just want to touch them. And they just, that question just pops out. But I find, like, when they ask those questions, that gives us that opportunity to kind of educate them.
I know.
I've been educated. I'm 25 years far too educated.
I know. But I feel like that's that opportunity to kind of open up that, okay, so why would you ask me that?
Right, yeah. Turn it into a learning moment, teaching moment, and kind of role reverse it.
Okay, so it just, I don't know. It gives that, to me, I feel like they're asking for a reason. So
that's true.
Give them that opportunity to share that, and you never know where it might turn to.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a time.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're in the mood. Sometimes you're like, okay, sure, I'll have this conversation with you right now.
Right, exactly.
How do you wash your hair the same way you do?
I just get in the shower.
How did you get your hair that curly? I put water on it. Oh my gosh. This is just too much. We could go on and feel like for literally
hours.
Goodness. My favorite was one time when I was in college, this white girl came up to me when I had my hair out and was like, I just love it when you wear your hair like that and it's just like so big and it just like takes up so much space and I just love to see you take up as much space as you can by having your hair down.
That's kind of an awkward thing.
It was so awkward. It was like, listen, girl, I know that you're trying right now to say something positive, but I'm gonna need you to chill.
Yeah, I just feel like, are you like telling me that I'm like large? Like, is it just my hair you're talking about? Like, I don't know.
Why do you want me to take up a lot of space?
Right.
Like, what's wrong with what I have right now?
Yeah. Do I get to choose how much space I get to take up? I think I do.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask this question. So how do you think that we can find a balance between wearing our masks to protect ourselves and our jobs while remaining genuine? So obviously, like, there's a difference between, like, wearing a mask and being professional and, like, totally, like, shape-shifting and, like, coding and all that stuff. So what do you feel like, what's like advice that you would give to other black professionals, you know, that might be dealing with the things that DeShante talked about?
I feel like you can learn. I think you have a balance between the both. Being professional and knowing when you be like, hey girl, you know, doing all that. I feel like there's a balance because we know how we are and we know how we can be, but when we have an opportunity, we can always switch it up a little bit. Like, hey, you know, this is, you know, you go through A, B, and C, D to sound professional. But then also you have that those moments. But I think you got to show a balance to me.
I would agree.
You just got to show a balance and just understand that it's worldwide. Everybody feels this way, right? We're not the only ones that feel that way. So if you can find a balance, then they're like, oh, okay. We get it.
Right.
Wink.
Right. Like, everyone has to find a balance. Not everyone is the same way mm-hmm. at work. Most people are not the same way they are at work
right.
as when they are when they're with their friends or
yeah.
in their home.
I think developing your professional self and sprinkling mm-hmm. your blackness on top. So who are you as a professional? And then add your flavor
right.
at the end of it. So
yeah.
I think that kind of goes back to, again, a little bit earlier to, like, for the black community also opening up what we like accept as blackness and kind of everything else following suit. Like, you know, that job is not like a white girl job, or because you're the only exactly. black girl that works for that company and you work with a lot of people, like, you work that bougie white people job or whatever. Yep. You know, I think that kind of in that way, some of that falls back on us a little bit too as a community to kind of open up those things and be more accepting of each other as well.
Yeah, because I've actually experienced even here that my own community, I wasn't accepted. Do you know what I mean? It was like I wasn't black enough.
Oh, right. Girl, no, that's another thing.
Right, that's a whole thing.
Right. I'm sorry.
Stay at home. I just
yes.
I mean, even right here, and it's like, why can I be accepted, and then another race is not accepting me, so where do I belong?
Right.
So I just, yes, what was it that you like? So.
Krista, is this my grandma? Grandma.
Yes.
Hey, Grandma.
So good.
Well, I'm not black.
I know.
Well, I didn't know if the other ladies knew.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah.
But I read this article a while ago, and I read it again tonight as you were reading it, and I found it, well, it made me emotional, and it was very sobering, and I appreciated the honesty of the group of ladies talking about how all of this happened in your lives, and I thought you articulated all of your experiences very well, and that you were very thoughtful and honest, and in no way, I think, Michaela, at one point, you are queen.
Yes, my grandma's calling me queen, you guys. Yes.
I'm sorry I let your real name out.
It's okay, Grandma. It's fine. You can call me Michaela.
I'm not doing the code thing right now.
Oh my goodness. Amazing.
But I really felt that you all had something useful and honest to say, and I didn't think in any way that you were trying to attack any other group of people, races of people, or anything else. You were telling your story, and it's true for you. So I have a question now.
Okay.
Maybe I shouldn't do this.
No, you can. And,
no, I mean, you know I do this, Michaela. Sometimes, so I do some work with foster children, and some of them are teen or older teen girls of color, and I'll ask Michaela for her advice on products.
Oh yeah, all the time.
Because what do I know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I asked you the last time, Michaela. I said, well, they're recommending Pantene for something Pantene had to do with African American mm-hmm. hair, and I said, I don't think that's good. Mm-hmm. So So I asked Michaela, is that appropriate, or am I disrespectful and out of line doing that?
I don't think I've seen a black girl in a Pantene commercial.
Okay,
that's how I would sell it.
They do have that line though, right? That line. You know what is it?
I wouldn't use it.
Yeah. I think it's appropriate to ask questions,
oh,
and
yeah.
I don't feel any type of way when you ask me. I'd rather you ask me than like get the wrong product for someone and they like feel like, why can't anybody get me the product that works for my hair? So I think you're doing a good job of like actually, you know, caring and trying your best to, you know, make this youth or these like youth feel comfortable in their own skin. So I don't ever have a problem with it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how I look at it is now I'm just talking as a woman. From woman to woman, I would try to give another woman something that I know she likes, that she uses, that supports who she is. And that's what I was trying to do in that instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I think you're doing good, Grandma.
Well, I wish I knew more. But I just want to thank you, ladies. And that very last sentence, the whole thing was emotional for me because it's not right. It's not right.
Yeah.
That you have to go through that. But that very last thing that she wrote really was sad.
I know, Grandma. Well, I don't want you to cry on the radio, but
okay.
I love
you know
that you.
I get.
I know. I love you, Grandma, and thank you for listening always.
Okay. Well, I'm using a fake name next time I call.
Okay. Okay, Grandma.
Shout out to Grandma for the support.
I won't call you by your real name either, Queen.
Okay. Thanks, Grandma.
Yes, Queen.
That's great.
Is she got? Yeah, so
wow, shout out to your grandma though.
Yeah, yeah. Calling. My mom calls, my grandma, my boyfriend. Shout out to them. But yeah, we have about 6 minutes, so if anybody wants to get one quick phone call in, it's 503-231-8187. Dial fast. But yeah, I think that's great. I mean, it's just crazy to me that like some large system like the foster care system like does not have, I guess,
resources.
People in place or resources in place for that type of thing. Like, hello. I mean, there's a lot of youth of color in foster care, and the fact that this is happening, you know, sponsors, or I don't know what the correct term is, but what my grandma is, but they don't know, and they're getting lists of things for things that aren't right. That's not the right product. And so it's like you're really like doing a disservice to these youth. And I just feel like, get it together, foster care. Like, come on.
It's about the money.
Okay. You can say that. You can just say like your opinion. That's not a problem.
No, it's just the money and the politics. Because yeah. I know a couple people in foster care, and they had to deal with that one issue.
Mm.
So they would just come to me to get their hair done instead of going through the state, because they don't want to pay the money for it to get it done. And they give you this little amount, and I'm like, do you know what we're working with here? Mm-hmm. It's not just we slap on some relaxer. No, we want to maintain her hair. So, and I'm more into the care of it, not just throwing something, a Band-Aid on it that you can't actually take care of long term.
Mm.
So I don't know. I just think it's just pushed underneath the rug.
And I think even culturally, just like for us and for Black women, like our hair is such a source of like coming together for us, you know, and the time that, you know, we spend on it and the knowledge that we share and kind of that cultural capital that is sad and stressful to think about kids that are in the foster system that don't have that same support and sense of community.
Yes.
Yeah, or even like, it's not sad, but I always try to tell, you know, my friends that are white that have, you know, mixed race kids, like, you need to educate yourself. I love my mom, but like I was getting relaxers when I was like 5. So it's like
I have black parents. I was getting relaxers.
I was about to say,
girl,
yeah, same. Black I mom, first relaxer at 6.
I'm 4 years now of not having any chemicals in my hair. My fro is flourishing. You can't see it now because I'm on the radio, but it's beautiful. every month for 3 days, I take my fro out. I like deep condition it. I have all organic products, but I did not know that until I came to a hair lady who did that with her hair and was like, we're gonna put wigs on you for 3 years and we're gonna make this fro go.
Yeah.
Wow. And it wasn't, I mean, I was getting, do you remember the flat, the like comb that you put on the
hot oven? Comb?
Yeah. Oh my God. Who
the
put, they
comb?
Were trying to take us out as a
the
race.
Oven.
I mean, you put, it, you in put it on the stove with the fire and
you
then
gotta
you
get the
just
twist
blow
and curl.
It a little.
Yes.
You put fire to your head. I can't handle it.
Right.
And it's untempered. So it's
yeah.
It's no whatever gauge. Temperature you're, yeah, whatever temperature, 5,000 degrees, whatever.
It is what it is.
That's why we get mad when you touch our hair, because we've survived battles.
Okay, though. We've literally, amen.
Be happy there's hair on this head for you to touch.
Right. And no, the lie relaxers.
Oh, God.
Before we got even a little sophisticated with that. I mean, I still get a relaxer, so whatever. Let me sit over here.
Okay, Paris, you're done. Okay, well, thank you so much for tuning into Queen Talk, and stay tuned for next month's episode. Thanks to all my guests.
I make money move. If I see you now, speak, that means I don't f*** with you. I'm a boss to a worker. I make bloody move. Now she say she gon' do what or who? Let's find out and see. Cardi B, you know where I'm at. You know where I be. You in the club just to party. I'm there, I get paid a fee. I be in and out them bands so much I know they tired of me. Honestly, don't give a f*** about who in front of me. Drop 2 mixtapes in 6 months. We're breaking as hard as me. I don't bother with these. Don't let these bother me. They see pictures, they say ghosts. I'm who they tryna be.
Look, I might just chill in some babe. I might just chill with your boo. I might just spill on your babe. My feel like a lake. He wanna swim with his face. I'm like, okay. I let him get what he want. He buy me Yves Saint Laurent in the new wave. When I go fast as a horse, I got the trunk in the front. I'm the hottest in the street. Know you probably heard of me. Got a bag and fix my teeth. Hope you know it ain't cheap. And I pay my mama bills. I ain't got no time to chill. Think these things be mad at me. They baby father wanna build. They little you can f*** with me if you wanted to. These expensive, these is red bottoms. These is bloody shoes. Hit the school, I can get them both. I don't wanna choose. And I'm quick, cutting off, so don't get comfortable. Look, I don't dance now, I make money moves. Say I don't gotta dance, I make money move. If I see you now, I don't speak, that means I don't f*** with you. I'm a boss, you a worker, bitch, I make bloody moves. If you a f***, you get popped, you a goofy, you a op. Don't you come around my way, you can't hang around my block. And I just check my account, turns out I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm rich. I put my hand above my hip, I bet you dip, he dip, she dip. I say, I get the money and go, dip this high like a stove. My glitter is gold, tell that little bitch her roll. I just a robe and a rose, I just came up in a rave. I need to fill up the tank, no, I need to fill up the safe. I need to let all these know, they none of the safe. I go to dinner and steak, only the real can relate. I used to live